and it doesn't change the rates that the agencies are.
Members of the committee, Finance Committee will come out of recess back to the hearing on Section D, House Bill 2. I think we're at the point where we're at questions from the committee. Questions from the committee. No, we're going to take roll at 4 o'clock when we go into our next meeting. We were just in recess. Questions for the committee? On OPD, yes. If we don't have questions, we should have just went 5 more minutes this morning. Senator McGilvray is standing in for Representative Mercer. If we have no questions, Senator McGilvray, would you like to wrap up the whole section?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to be a little more succinct than Chairman Mercer, and I'm going to wrap up the section, and this, I guess, closes the hearing on it.
This closes the hearing on House Bill 2, Section D. We will, without further ado, the hearing on House Bill 2 is closed. And we will come back at 4 o'clock for our... And we have amendment takers that will be in this room till 4, and then they'll go to my room. So if you have amendments to prepare, Katie and Molly are here. Yes, so the meeting is of finance is adjourned till now. Well, that was stupid. I thought you told me we were going to have a whole bunch of questions.
Hey, Walker. Before you leave, Michelle.
So, members, let's come to order and get roll taken.
Oh, here, I'll just...
Senator Lynch,
Yes, sir.
Let's get roll taken for you, Boogie. Cy, take the roll, please.
Vice Chair Glenn.
Excused.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Here.
Senator Solomon.
Excused.
Senator McGilvery.
Here.
Senator Boldman.
Here.
Senator Bartel.
Cuff is here.
Senator Mandeville.
Here.
Senator Morgeau.
Excuse.
Senator Lenz.
Excused.
Senator Lang.
Excused.
Senator Lynch.
Here.
Senator Bogner.
Excused.
Senator Cuff.
Here.
No.
Here.
Here.
Senator Flowers.
Here.
Senator Fuller.
Excused.
Senator Vance.
Here.
Senator Pope.
Here.
Senator Wellborn.
Here.
Chairman Esp.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Thank you, Cy. Okay. So those of us on the committee that are still drafting amendments to House Bill 2, we have two staff members here. They will be going to my office momentarily, and you can go in there and have amendments drafted. We're going to hear six bills today in the order that's on the board. These are all re-referrals from the floor. So we're just going to talk to the fiscal note and be as brief as we can. Most of them passed handily on the floor. Let's see what else. That's it, I think. Senator or Representative, we're going to open the hearing on House Bill 381. Representative Brewster.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's good to appear before you. My name is Larry Brewster, last name B-R-E-W-S-T-E-R. I represent House District 44 in Billings. It's in the best part of Billings. This bill, 381, is brought forward for the city of Billings. As many of you know, just briefly, we have a methamphetamine problem in Billings. And we have gun shootouts in the streets occasionally, and a lot of problems. And the original bill on this was, we felt would be a good tool to help fight the methamphetamine problem. It didn't have a lot of cost to the community or others. Basically, it said if an officer arrived at a scene and discovered there was methamphetamine contamination, he reported it to the agency, and they made a determination whether it was a valid report, and then required they went on a list and had to be cleaned up to get off the list. So it had a low cost then, but then it was amended in the Senate on the floor, and with that amendment, it's a pretty terrible bill, I have to tell you. It pulls a lot of costs in. It requires police officers to do testing that they don't have the training for. And if they use cheap testing equipment, it wouldn't work well enough to be held up in court. The police and fire department, I mean, police departments and sheriff departments feel like it's going to chase them all over the place because they have to look at every phone call that came in to test for methamphetamine. So it makes the bill completely unworkable. And I suspect if you did a fiscal report on it for the local governments, it would be very, very expensive. The way it was, it's a useful tool for methamphetamine. And I would hope when you do EA on it or go forward, you'd either remove that or pass it on so I can fix it at some point. But it was a good bill before, not very good now. So with that, we'll listen to proponents and opponents and see where we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Yes.
Proponents on the bill. Remember, we're speaking to the fiscal impact only. Proponents. Opponents. Opponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rick Thompson. I'm the bureau chief. Oh, T-H-O-M, PSON. I'm the Bureau Chief of the Waste Management Bureau at the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. And within my bureau, there is a methamphetamine control program, and we stand opposed to this bill as revised.
All right. Thank you, sir. Further opponents? Further opponents? Any information? Is there anybody online, Chase?
Mr. Chair, there is not. No.
All right. Thank you. Informational witnesses? Informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Representative, I have a question. So
Mr.
when
Chair.
You look at the bill, is sub 2 the part that we put in over here?
Right.
Okay. And that's what you'd like removed?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions? Senator Pope.
Mr. Chair, when you said sub 2, where was that?
Section 1.
Yeah. Okay. Got it. Thank you very much.
Seeing no further questions, Representative, care to close?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Just to reiterate, if we get the bill back where it was, it's a great tool. It helps us with the problems we have. If you're going to leave it on or not push it forward, I would rather see it die than keep it the way it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 381. If you care to request an amendment, I would, in my name, Representative.
Okay, I will, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
House Bill 147, are we all ready? We'll open the hearing on House Bill 147, Representative Gillette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Representative Jane Gillette. I'm from House District 64, which is in Gallatin County. That's Four Corners, Gallatin Gateway, Big Sky, and West Yellowstone. And I'm here today to present to you the fiscal note of House Bill 147. This bill actually comes out of the Children and Family Health and Human Services Interim Committee. We spent a good deal of time looking at mental health services, both for adults and children, and this one focuses on children. When we asked PRTFs are psychiatric residential treatment facilities. And when we asked PRTFs how could we help them keep children in the state receiving services instead of having to go out of state to receive services, because that is a thing. We're sending quite a few children out of state to receive services instead of keeping them in state near their family and homes. They said that the biggest issue was that they just didn't have staff. So when we asked them, how could we help you get more staff, they said, maybe no surprise, but that if the rates were higher, that they could manage to pay for and hire more staff. So that's, in the end, what this bill tries to do. Originally, the original bill also included therapeutic group homes, but that was amended out in the Senate side. One thing you should know, and today when you were in committee, I think I left with you, Mr. Chair, some sort of larger Excels on a big piece of paper. If you have those are probably handy for you to help understand this issue. But when we send children out of state, it turns out that we pay 133% of what is the base rate. So we pay our in-state providers this, and then we pay our out-of-state providers 33% higher than what we pay our in-state providers. And so the committee, thinking that, well, that's not super equitable, let's make it so that we pay our in-state providers a similar rate as to what the out-of-state providers are going to be or do get paid. So that's what this fiscal note is. That amount that you see in net impact general fund balance, that's the difference between what we currently pay our in-state providers and what it would take to pay them the current in this year, the difference between that and what the out-of-state providers get. We are currently, and you've heard it in your Senate Finance and Claims. You heard from Section B today, and you heard proposed rate increases that we're considering right now. And so mostly, and the fiscal note doesn't take this into account. I'm sorry, that's why that Excel is pretty helpful for you. But in 2024, they won't have quite made it to a 33% increase. But in 2025, they'll be there. So I'm not even sure that the 2025 column that you see there is very germane. It's mostly the 2024 one that you would want to pay attention to. And I'm not sure if I'm making any sense. I spend so much time thinking about these things that I'm not sure where your knowledge is on all of this. But the basics is if you adopted what was presented to you from Section B, the rate increases, that really the only fiscal impact that you would have would be that fiscal year 2024. Because by fiscal year 2025, we've made it to that 33% increase, which is in the bill. The bill says that we'll take that basically the PRTFs will be paid either the rate increase that the legislature approves or whatever's this in this bill, whichever is higher. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd stand for questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Any proponents in the room? Proponents, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Matt Kuntz, K-U-N-T-Z. I'm the executive director of NAMI Montana. We're a grassroots organization that supports, educates, and advocates for Montanans who live with mental health conditions and their families. And we've been involved with tracking the issue of kids being sent out of state at least since I've joined NAMI Montana back in 2008. It's been a continuous repeat issue. We looked at it, we study it, and this has been the only thing I've actually seen where somebody's actually come up with a real solution that made sense to actually get these difficult kids to be able to stay in state at the same cost of the out-of-state providers. It's a real solution, and I can't keep track of House Bill 2 or what's going on with this budget or that budget. But this is the first real solution for an issue that I've seen for over a decade. So please consider giving it a due pass.
Thank you, Mr. Kuntz. Further proponents. Chase, is there anyone online on this bill?
Mr. Chair, there is none.
Thank you. Opponents in the room, informational witnesses.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Chairman Esp, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Megan Peel, P-E-E-L. I'm the Bureau Chief for the Children's Mental Health Bureau for DPHHS, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Peel. Further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Bartell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I was a little late, but a question for the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bartell.
So on the fiscal note, Mr. Chair, Representative, on the fiscal note on assumption number 5, it assumes there's going to be 188 clients with a 6% growth. Is there somewhere in here, because I was a little late, is there a cap for the general fund so that this wouldn't be open-ended funding out of the general fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator, if I'm understanding your question, there's not a cap on that necessarily, but there's only certain number of children who require PRTF services, right? There's not, like, unlimited numbers. They have to meet very strict guidelines, and if they don't make those guidelines, then they either go down to a lower level of care, like a therapeutic group home, or they go up to like an inpatient hospital setting. So there's a very narrow number of those. And again, just because we were speaking on the fiscal note, but there's a sister bill to this as well. But not all children will qualify for this enhanced rate. It's only a certain acuity level. So ones that have a higher acuity level, they might have intense suicide risk or be violent or things like that, or also a combination of children who are very young. So there's only a limited set of children who would actually qualify for this enhanced rate. And you can see how many they're predicting in the table there. They're predicting that it will be 28 in 2024, it will be 28 kids that meet this criteria. In 2025, it'll be 30. They're basically anticipating about 2 kids each year that meet this criteria, so not a ton.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
For the question, I have one from Ms. Peel. Ms. Peel, I'm assuming the department looked this all over when they did the fiscal note. Did they anticipate any fiscal problems with the woodwork effect? A bunch of people showing up qualifying for this.
Thank you for the question, Chairman Esp. Because it's limited to only our in-state providers to receive the enhanced payment, it could incentivize another provider to establish business in Montana, but we have very limited capacity for PRTF beds in Montana. We have 2 providers. One has 98 beds and is operating close to capacity right now. And then the other provider is licensed for 54 beds, and I believe they're operating at about 50% capacity, but we're pretty limited in the availability of PRTF beds in Montana.
Thank you, Ms. Peel. So there's probably not much fear that we're paying so well we're going to incent a whole bunch more providers to come in?
Yeah, Chairman Esp, correct. That's right. And then also, as Representative Gillette had mentioned about the provider rate increase, the fiscal note will likely be even smaller.
Great. Further questions? Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close?
Well, thank you. That was really easy. Thanks for being easy on me. I don't have too much to say. I think if you have questions about the fiscal note or just about this topic in general, Senator Lenz was on that committee as well, and I'm sure he'd be able to speak to the origin of this bill and how we got here. And with that, I ask for due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. This closes the hearing on Senate or House Bill 147. We will now open the hearing on House Bill 243. Representative Marler.
Good afternoon, Senator Esp, committee members. My name is Marilyn Marler, M-A-R-L-E-R. I represent House District 90, which is in Missoula. I'm here today to share with you House Bill 243. It's easy to remember that this is a hunter education bill because 243 is the best caliber for a new hunter and a small statured person as myself. In its current form, this bill will require all new hunters under the age of 18 to attend hunter education in person, and all new hunters, regardless of their age, to attend an in-person field day to demonstrate safe firearms handling. And this is simply a requirement that Fish, Wildlife, and Parks return to the pre-COVID requirements for hunter education that have been in place for decades, more than 50 years in Montana, but was disrupted by the whole, you may have heard, COVID situation. I don't want to go too much into it, but just in case some people here are not familiar with the hunter education program, I want to give a quick overview because it does relate to the fiscal note. And I explain how we got to this hearing and why this bill is in front of you today. Hunter education was started more than 50 years ago in Montana and other states in North America by hunters and for hunters. It has 2 main goals, which is to teach new hunters firearm safety and hunting ethics, both of which are very important to the continuation of hunting, which is important to all of us here in Montana. It's also a rite of passage for new hunters, whether adult onset or children in Montana, and something that a lot of people look fondly upon. Historically, it has been taught by volunteer instructors, and that is the intention for where we're going, although you'll see a fiscal note, which we'll discuss.
Representative Marler, that's actually our intention, is to discuss the fiscal note.
Oh, okay.
And that's about it.
This relates to the fiscal note.
Okay.
I'm going to go really fast, and we'll be right to the fiscal note right in a second, because there's a reason that the fiscal note is the way it is. Prior to COVID, we had hundreds of volunteer instructors, I think 800 volunteer instructors across the state. In each of the FWP regions, there was a quarter-time FTE dedicated to coordinating the Hunter Ed program. When COVID hit, all of the in-person classes and field days were canceled, and everybody, regardless of age, was allowed to take the course online for free. And then when the COVID restrictions were lifted, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks decided to leave it that as the new status quo. And this bill is requesting that everything go back to the way it was before. But what happened during COVID was we lost that huge, extensive network of volunteer instructors that had been in place and generational for 50 years. Many of them resigned out of frustration and COVID situations, et cetera. So that's not good enough for our kids, and that's why we're here. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has responded by saying that to get things back up to where it was before COVID, they're going to invest in one FTE for each of the 8 regions to coordinate the reboot. And anyone who's worked with volunteers, you know that volunteers aren't free. Somebody has to organize them, thank them, help them to start getting things scheduled. I think a lot of the volunteers felt disrespected when the policy changed, and it's going to take a little bit to get it going. The money in the fiscal note, it's about $800,000. It's not state general fund. It is all from federal excise tax, the Pittman-Robertson tax that is currently available to Fish, Wildlife, and Parks for hunter education that is not currently dedicated to anything else. So that's why I wanted to give you the background on how it was historically run and where we're going to go from here. I look forward to re-energizing our wonderful program, and I will sit for opponents and proponents, mostly proponents.
So now I'll call for proponents of House Bill 243. Remember, we're talking about fiscal impact only.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the money. Representative Neil Durham from Northwest Montana, House District 2. Representative Marla and I had the same idea. Quite frankly, her idea was better. Both bills were drafted, but I end up co-sponsoring her bill. Reference the money. It's important to note that 4 years ago, Fish, Wildlife, Parks had a solid hunters education program. And then with COVID, the system got blunted. They lost approximately half their volunteers. It's going to take money to get the system back up and running. I think it's appropriate to have a regional coordinator in each of the 8 regions to get the system jump-started and off and running again. I also think it's important to note that it's free money. It's from the federal government. This is the Pittman-Roberts money that comes from an excise tax based on what sportsmen purchase through our regular important purchases of ammo and guns and hunting stuff, that a portion of that comes back to the state, specifically targeted for hunters education. So I think this is a very appropriate use of that funds, and I support it however I can. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents. Welcome, Mr. Lamb.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Ben Lamb, LAMB, representing the Montana Wildlife Federation and the Montana Citizens Elk Management Coalition. As the previous proponent said, this is a 75-25 split between Pittman-Robertson money, so please go buy that extra shotgun and an extra case of ammunition, and let's get this program up and running. The other 25% comes from the general license account. Great use of sportsmen's dollars all around. We are very much in support of this expenditure and this bill. Thank you.
Further proponents.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Leo. Last name is spelled L-E-O-W. I'm here representing the Montana chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. We stand in strong support of House Bill 243. We support this bill for a number of reasons. I know we're sticking to the fiscal note, but I'll just sum up our broad support by saying that hunter ethics and safety is important for Montana and should be a priority. Speaking directly to the fiscal note, this is money well spent. As you've heard, there's plenty of PR dollars to go around, so this doesn't need to create any significant strain on our state budget. We also want to point out that the majority of this is volunteer-driven. We've done this before back in the good old days when we had in-person hunter training. It worked. The department was able to make it work, and we think we can get it back there, but it needs the push with this bill. So we support it, and we hope you do too. Thanks.
Thank you. Further proponents? Seeing none, is there anybody online, Chase, on this bill?
Mr. Chair, there is not.
Opponents to House Bill 243. Opponents. Informational witnesses.
Good afternoon, Chair S, members of the committee. I am Lena Haveron, H-A-V-R-O-N. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Haveron. Further information to witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee. Senator Cuff.
For Ms. Haveron, FWP.
Chair S, Senator Cuff.
Yes, Ms. Financial Director. Is the Pittman Robertson money already committed? Is it available for this? Are there dollars available to cover this?
Senator S. Senator Cuff, there are earmarked out of the big PR bucket funds specific for hunter education. Last year's apportionment for that was about $2.2 million, of which we do not spend it at all. So I guess the simple answer would have just been yes, sir. There is.
Okay, thank you. I just want to clarify that.
Ms. Haveron, stay up there. Go ahead, sir.
I just want to clarify that you're saying yes, there is money there. Yes, it could be used for this account. And yes, you're certainly not an opponent. You're an informational. Thank you.
Yes.
So
to all.
Ms. Haveron, before... Yes. COVID came along 2 or 3 years ago. Did you have 8 FTE coordinating this program all over the state?
Senator Esp, we did not. We did rely heavily on volunteers to coordinate the program. A few things have happened. As mentioned, we've lost a lot of volunteers. We've seen an increase in participants into the program. The only way that we feel we can meet the criteria within the statute would be for you all to approve the fiscal note.
Thank you. Senator Flowers.
Thank you. Question for Ms. Haveron, sorry.
Ms. Haveron.
Haveron, sorry.
Chair Esp. Senator Flowers.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Haveron. So I know in the past this program was managed in each region by the information and education position, and now you're planning to hire another full-time person to manage just this program in each region, and it sounds like you've got the money in that's earmarked for information and education in the PR dollars. But I'm just questioning whether if this used to be managed in each region by one person, now we're adding. Basically, two people will be responsible in each region. Do you see that as an ongoing commitment, or is it going to be for the first year to get this stood up and then that position goes away? I'm not sure there's a full-time job there, in other words, is what I'm wondering. Once you reestablish your volunteer group, is it a full-time job after that?
So, Chair S, Senator Flowers, currently the folks in the regions right now may spend up to 0.25% of their time on this program. So that was along with having a robust, like 960 at least somewhat part-time volunteers. We are down to knowing we have maybe about 400 and some. So without full-time dedicated FTE, we could not stand the program up to meet the statutory requirement in this bill. So we do feel like it would be an ongoing full-time position. As many of you may have put children through hunter safety, even when we were pre-COVID and in good times, there was often a lot of times your kids had to wait, miss a class in the bigger areas. This would allow those children to get through in a quicker manner if we can get the volunteers back to help as well.
Further questions? Seeing none, Representative, would you care to close?
Yes, thanks for a good hearing. Thanks, FWP, for answering some of those questions. I heard this bill has had good support in the other chamber and committee hearings, and what I've heard from a lot of folks is that there's more demand than the pre-COVID staffing was able to reach. And just to be and so this could help with that. I hope that the person could possibly help with live online as Hunter Ed. There could be different innovations that could help rural folks with Hunter Ed also. But short story, I think it's a good and reasonable fiscal note for a product that a lot of people want. Money's there. I hope we can do this for our kids and for our sport. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on your bill. Members of the committee, we have a sponsor. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 36. Representative Beatty.
Chairman Esp and members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Beatty. I'm the representative for House District 86, which is comprised of Hamilton and the immediately surrounding area. You have before you here House Bill 36, a bill that substantially updates the means by which the state provides aid to schools that are experiencing sustained and substantial enrollment increases. I'm carrying this bill on behalf of the Legislative Finance Committee, which has endorsed the work that was done over this past interim by the Education Interim Committee. As you can see in the fiscal note, there is a fairly significant fiscal impact, particularly in the out years. But I would draw your attention in the fiscal note to page 3, item 11, which the last sentence of that item suggests that there is unpredictable variation in enrollment unrelated to the assumptions used in this fiscal note, which is another way of saying this is a pretty complicated situation. What I have for you, I think, to help understand this program and how it compares to the status quo is a handout which, with your permission, Chairman Esp, I'd like to distribute and then talk from that if you would allow.
Please. Go ahead, sir. Catch up.
What you'll see here on this handout is we did a retrospective analysis of how it had House Bill 36 been implemented over the period 2014 through 2021, what the difference would be in between that and the status quo. The status quo is it's a couple of statutes that provide school districts the opportunity to receive supplemental funding based upon anticipated or unanticipated enrollment increases. So the you'll see in the top portion of this handout is just a comparison of how the two programs differ. Quickly walk you through that. Right now, under current law, there isn't a factor that relates to sustained growth. The sustained growth factor in House Bill 36 is that enrollment has to have increased over 110% over the last previous 3 years. Just as a historical note, when this several decades ago, when this program was first established, sustained growth was the primary criterion for determining whether or not a school district qualified. But over the intervening years, these programs have morphed into something somewhat different. Then you'll see in the next column, there's what's called an absorption factor, and that's based on the premise that school, generally speaking, school districts are able to take additional students into their classrooms without substantial increase in cost, and so hence should be able to absorb a certain number of students before any supplemental funding is provided. And you can see what the two criteria are here for the House Bill 36 and the current law. Current law provides that it's the lesser of 40 A and B, or which is roughly students, or 4% of the district's budget limit A and B, whereas our absorption factor in 36 is 5 A and B plus 3% of the budget limit A and B. Moving on to the payments, there's a difference in how the payments are made. House Bill 36 calls for 80% of the per A and B entitlement, whereas under current law, remember, there's two different options. If there's anticipated enrollment, that is, it's anticipated prior to the school year and prior to the budgeting for that school year, the school district can actually budget and hence tax for that period. So they'll under this program, or under the current program, they receive direct state aid, DSA, plus the amount of the permissive levy that they're allowed to do based upon that anticipated enrollment. The unanticipated enrollment situation is when they realize they have too many students. It's after the budget time, and so they receive the DSA. So you see that there is a local property tax impact in the current law under the anticipated case. Perhaps this is significant. I know it's significant if you're in a school district. School districts must apply for under the current program, so there is a degree of administrative costs that's not reflected in here. The program that is being promoted in House Bill 36 is, for lack of a better word, self-executing. That is to say, the A and B numbers are reported and the account numbers are reported to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, as they always are now, and then if the sustained growth factor and the absorption factors are exceeded, you will have a payment that will be provided to the school district to supplement them for that particular year. This can be the supplement of it becomes important because it allows them to maintain the reserves at an adequate level to move to the next school year. Now, if you take a look at the analysis that was performed by analysts in the OPI over this past summer and into the fall, you'll see we had a test period of 2014 through 2021, and in most cases, especially recently, you saw in terms of general fund expenditures, that would be that difference in pre A and B entitlement or the direct state aid, an actual savings to the state until you got to 2021, which is an anomaly. That is, we're still scratching our heads on that one. But if you take the entire period and on average, you'll see that the cost to the state on average over that period was $85,000 per year. If you take a look at the local property tax impact, or the impact on local property taxes, because House Bill 36 does not have a provision for permissive levies, you're going to get a savings on property taxes every year, and the average there you can see is $620,000. And so as I evaluate this program, as a matter of fact, as we were evaluating this program over the summer, we hadn't done the retrospective analysis by the time the LFC saw this, but this looked to be a kind of a win-win situation. I would suggest that with the variability that we have here, and I believe that we have informational witnesses here that can be helpful in this respect. Some of the variability related to enrollment fluctuations during COVID, I believe, have some impact on the numbers that you see in the fiscal note. But I will not opine on that any further. And Chairman Esp, that is my opening on the fiscal impacts of House Bill 36.
Thank you, Representative. Proponents of the bill. Proponents. Mr. Melton.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association. My last name is spelled M-E-L-T-O-N. Just testifying on behalf of my own organization today. What I like about the fiscal impact in this bill and the way that it's structured is that it creates certainty and predictability. The current system has a guessing game going on, and sometimes you guess wrong, and so you have to turn money back in, and it gets a little bit chaotic. I like the structure of this in terms of really showing that the kids that show up are the ones that are going to be funded. And I think in the long run, you're going to see a great stabilization of this mechanism compared to what it's like under the current law. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Melton. Further proponents? For the proponents, Chase, is there anybody online on House Bill 36?
Mr. Chair, there is not.
Thank you. Opponents? Opponents, please. Informational witnesses.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Paul Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. I'm a budget analyst for the Office of Public Instruction and have been with this particular concept since its beginning. So if you have questions, Rep. Edie or myself more than likely would be able to answer your questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Further informational witnesses? Seeing none, questions from the committee? Seeing none. Would you care to close on your bill, Representative?
Thank you, Chairman Espin, and members of the committee. And thank you for this opportunity to go over House Bill 36 with you. I think House Bill 36 has a great deal of potential. It obviously has a positive property tax impact. I think going forward, we're going to see the savings rather than the upsides. The bill is structured in such a way that as we study the impact of significant impact and substantial impact or enrollment increases, it does have parameters in it so that we might adjust the absorption factor, for example, and change the numbers there so that it reflects, it might better reflect experience that we have going forward. But with that being said, I won't take any more of your time and ask your positive action on this particular bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 36. We will open the hearing on House Bill 270. Representative Kazmaier.
Thank you, Chairman and committee members. Representative Kazmaier, House District 27, bring before you House Bill 270. It's doing one simple thing. It's extending the sunset that was passed in the last session for the Natural Resources Operations Special Revenue from June of 2025 to 2027. We're just trying to give the department DEQ, DNRC, and all the miners come together, figure out a new fee structure. We extended it to 27 because we want to make sure we're in session when this is set to expire, to make sure we have our legislation to be put forward to fund this program. So with that, I would ask for it to pass.
Thank you, Representative. Any proponents of the bill? Proponents, please. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sonja Nowakowski, S-O-N-J-A-N-O-W-A-K-O-W-S-K-I. I'm the Division Administrator for Air, Energy, and Mining at the Department of Environmental Quality. DEQ is here in support of House Bill 270 as amended, a bill to extend the current statutory sunset date for natural resource operations, or NRO, backfill to 2027. DEQ and the Mining Bureau in particular relies on the NRO account to review mine permit applications, to prepare timely, legally defensible permits, and to complete compliance assistance and oversight of mining operations. Sticking to the fiscal note, House Bill 270 extends the statutory provision that supplements NRO with general fund as needed to cover the amount appropriated by the legislature from the account. In 2021, this may be familiar to you, House Bill 373 was approved and established that current 2025 sunset date for that backfill. Essentially, DEQ is requesting that we extend that current sunset of the backfill, but why and why now? DEQ remains committed to pursuing options for broadening its mining program funding sources. House Bill 270 is a commitment to you, the legislature, that DEQ and the Montana Mining Association, as well as our other stakeholders, will work together on a revised and useful hard rock mining fee structure. This extension will allow the DEQ one biennium to work with stakeholders on an increase and a change in mining fees, bring that back to the legislature in 2025 to see if the legislature supports that change in fees, and then return to the legislature in 2027 to request appropriate NRO backfill, as hopefully offset by these new mining fees approved by the 2025 legislature. So having that one additional biennium to collect the fee is going to put DEQ on solid ground to come back in 2027 and hopefully ask you for less general fund or less NRO backfill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Sonia. Further proponents?
Chair, us members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mark Bostrom. That's M-A-R-K-B-O-S-T-R-O-M. I'm the administrator of the Conservation Resource Development Division at DNRC. Natural Resource Operation is a DNRC-administered account. Just here, Sonia pretty much nailed it. Looked at the fiscal note version 3 and 4. Agree with 4. The only difference between 3 and 4 is that the significant local government impact box is not checked in 4, which we agree with. So with that, we stand in support. Chair Asp.
Thank you, sir. Any further proponents? Mr. Elliott.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Clayton Elliott, ELL-IOTT with Montana Trout Unlimited. Those of us who spend a lot of time in Section C know that this is a pretty critical component to making the budget work in Section C, and certainly appreciate the opportunity to have a more lengthy discussion about a more durable solution moving forward and having the biennium to do that. But today, 270 is an important part, key to making Section C work. So we support this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further proponents? Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Matt Vincent, V-I-N-C-E-N-T, with the Montana Mining Association. Just want to state our association's support for this bill. As amended, we're committed to working with the department during the interim, as Ms. Nowakowski said, and believe this is a good bill. Will allow the department the funding for them to continue these vital operations that help serve us, and we'll have time to make sure that we address this properly moving into the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vincent. Further proponents? Further proponents? Chase, is there anyone online for this bill?
Mr. Chair, there is. We have Shauna Lyons, who is an informational witness.
Okay. We'll get to her in a second then. Any opponents? Any opponents? Informational witnesses? Ms. Lyons.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Shauna Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, Director of Budget and Planning for the Commissioner of Higher Ed, available for questions on the fiscal note related to the Bureau of Mines.
Thank you, Ms. Lyons. Seeing no further informational witnesses, questions from the committee. Representative, I have one. I see you've been kind of schizophrenic about the when the act terminates. Were you schizophrenic in the House, or were we over here?
Mr. Chair, that's all been done in the House. Okay. Will you change and then change to 2027 in the Senate Natural Resources Committee?
All right, great. Thank you.
One and one.
Further questions? Seeing none, would you care to close on your bill, Representative?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, that date, probably 2027, probably needs to stay in there. That's a good amendment. That gives us some time to get legislation passed next session, and gives us another whole biennium. Make sure the funding comes through. That way, the legislation works. So, with this, that I'd ask to give these guys some time, get it worked out, so we have some good legislation and get this taken care of. So, with that, I ask for due pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. This closes the hearing on House Bill 270. We're going to open the hearing on House Bill 257. Your folder's labeled wrong, but the right bill is inside it. Representative Sprunger, you may open on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Courtney Sprunger. That last name is S-P-R-U-N-G-E-R.
representing House District 7, the heart of Kalispell. I would first like to commend the committee because I've never seen six bills work through so quickly, so well done. Let's make this the final run into the home stretch here. I'm going to be presenting today for you House Bill 257, and that's basically it's called the Advanced Opportunities Bill. And what this bill does is it provides funding for opportunities for our students beyond the brick and mortar that would cover out-of-pocket costs a family would otherwise incur to explore these opportunities. They're very specific to a student's particular interests and aptitudes and often are things that are in the career technical space. But that could also be used for any variety of things from healthcare to additional learning, preparing for college, that kind of thing. So what I do want to say is this is not a new program. This is a program that's been in existence for 6 years. The bill would seek to make this appropriation permanent. And actually what we have done is adjusted the program to weight more money towards the families and students. So it's now 75 cents on the dollar is going to go to students and families. 25% will go to the schools to help continue to administer this program. The appropriation has been increased from $2.5 million annually to $4 million, and that's to ensure that everybody stays whole and we're able to continue to execute the program. I have heard from a few folks that they're concerned about this bill because they don't see a line item in House Bill 2, and I think that's a fair concern. So what I want to let you know is there actually is, in fact, a line item in House Bill 2. There's somebody here who is a lot smarter than I am that's going to walk you through exactly what happened in coordination between the appropriation and this bill and the budget office. But what I can tell you is this is accounted for, and there is coordination language for that. Few other things that you might be curious about is this program working? When we first started it, there were 10 districts participating. There are now 62 districts. If you're curious about how the money is being used, students, that kind of thing, we have a lot of those numbers we can share with you today if that's of interest. Last couple things, we are asking for $8 million for the biennium. There's likely approximately $12 million in demand out there if these students are actually all participating, and we're certainly seeing a growth in interest in these programs. So last thing I would leave you with before we open the discussion is what I heard one superintendent say is in his 36 years, it's the best program that he has seen in operation. And the way he quoted it, he said, it's not just a game changer, it's a life changer. And I think this is our opportunity to give students a head start on getting a great career, being able to make enough money to actually perhaps buy and own a home and build a life here in Montana. So we'll sit for your questions and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative. Any proponents of the bill? Proponents.
Good afternoon, Chairman Esp, members of the committee. I'm Sarah Swanson, S-W-A-N-S-O-N. I serve as the Director of Strategic Engagement for the administration. I'm housed in the Commissioner's Office at the Montana Department of Labor and Industry, and I rise today before you on behalf of both Governor Gianforte and the Montana Department of Labor and Industry in strong support of House Bill 257, funding for which was provided for in the governor's budget. House Bill 257, in a nutshell, is the only mechanism we have in Montana in which funding follows the student, not the system. This is the only way we fund students directly in Montana. In the last fiscal year, Advanced Opportunities funding funded 24,000 individual Montana students. As a reference point, there's approximately 48,000 students in Montana high schools today. Perhaps the most critical component of Advanced Opportunities is that this program provides funds to directly offset the out-of-pocket costs that would otherwise have to be borne by a student or their family, but before they can access a program or a certificate or a credential. Therefore, Advanced Opportunities removes the financial barriers to entry that used to prevent students from accessing these opportunities, regardless of the student's socioeconomic status. We all know that industry has to partner in this work to invest in education, and boy, have they ever. We've got some proponents here today that'll tell you about that. But we cannot meet the demand if financial barriers for things like basic personal protective equipment or safety certificates or entry-level credentials require cash out of a student's pocket before they can access these industry opportunities. You have heard many bills this session targeting education innovation and CTE or programming for students. Advanced Opportunities is absolutely the bedrock foundation on which all these other programs stand. without advanced opportunities, out-of-pocket student costs will continue to be a barrier, preventing students from accessing partnership with any of the other programs that we've talked about this year. Briefly, Advanced Opportunities was created back in 2019. It's been fully operational for 3 years. It runs side by side with the Transformational Learning Program that also passed in 2019. The whole purpose is to incentivize school districts to put a special emphasis on work-based learning and individualized proficiency-based pathways for students. Giving students access to that industry classroom provides the opportunity for relevant, stackable industry credentials and higher ed dual credit opportunities for students. Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple of handouts if I could just send around.
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
You need to bring your testimony around to the money, though.
Absolutely.
That's all we talk about here.
I won't read these to you. What you'll see on these is the direct fiscal impact to the students and to the districts from three good examples in Montana: Billings, Red Lodge, and Great Falls. You'll see dramatic increases to student services based on the money appropriated to schools. For example, Billings using $90,000 for elementary students and $260,000 for high school students outlines how they deliver outcomes for students. What we don't have are handouts from every single district participating in the program, but for those of you on the committee that represent places like Billings, Big Timber, Miles City, Belgrade, if you want to know the information for your districts, we've got experts from OPI who can provide that to you as well. In close, the level of innovation Montana has experienced in a few short years because of Advanced Opportunities, having reached over 24,000 students a year, would have never been possible without this program before you today. We're just getting started, but we need to continue Advanced Opportunities. It's a key part of the strategy to transform Montana's education system into one that provides every single student an opportunity to achieve their highest educational potential and to meet the ongoing demands of economic development in our state. It is the bedrock of this work, and we urge you on behalf of both the governor and the department to do pass House Bill 257. Thank you.
Who are the proponents? Speaking to the fiscal note.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Smith. That's common spelling. I'm the executive director of the Montana Contractors Association. I know that there's always talk about skin in the game, and so do the business. Does the business world have any skin in the game? And I'll just tell you a little bit about the Billings example. Young people there are getting, they've had a logging experience, a commercial project tour at a bottling plant. Gravel and paving company added 4 additional days for introduction to surveying and engineering. Students earned their OSHA 10 certification. A statewide steel recycling company is going to be adding an experience. A national refinery is going to add a refining safety presentation and tour. Two contractors in the Billings area have donated about 760 hours of their time to plan this, averaged conservatively at $125 an hour. That's an investment of about $95,000. There's hard costs such as machine hours and fuel. School District 2 spent roughly $3,000 buying safety boots and arranging school busing. 2 schools were added in the Billings area this year, and the schools did not have advanced opportunity grants, so the MCA stepped up and bought steel-toed boots to the tune of about $1,600. We estimate that the 2 equipment dealers make available $750,000 worth of equipment each day that the students are on for machine operation and hands-on activities. There's roughly $1.5 million worth of equipment staged for our concluding exercise. The 2 equipment dealers spent roughly $2,000 each getting their equipment out to the sites. You've been dealing with a lot of good workforce development issues this session. Thank you very much for that, and I encourage you to support Senate Bill 257.
Thank you, sir. Further proponents?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Melton with the Montana School Boards Association. My last name is spelled M-E-L-T-O-N. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Coalition of Advocates for Montana's Public Schools. That includes the Montana Association of School Business Officials, the Montana Quality Education Coalition, the School Administrators of Montana, and Montana School Boards Association. Montana Rural Education Association as well, if I didn't already mention that. In any case, Mr. Chairman, can I hand out an annotated copy of the fiscal note, please?
Sure. That might be refreshing.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I assisted Representative Jones in House Bill 387 that created this act and worked with the sponsor in drafting the provisions this time around. Talking about the fiscal elements here, and you know, I don't pretend to know exactly where House Bill 2 is or how it looks when it's amended, but I see the official version online, and the official version online is included in the last page behind this fiscal note, page E2. Lines 12 and 13 that has approximately $7.5 million in House Bill 2 right now. There's a coordination provision in Section 4 of this bill, House Bill 257, that says if both bills pass and House Bill 2 includes funding for advanced opportunities, that it's X'd out. So from that standpoint, I look at it and identify $300,000 in the first year, $200,000 in the second year. And the coordination clause will take care of any double count. On page 2, there is just a couple of comments. There's in note number 7, there's a reference to how this would have worked with the existing funding under the old system. And I just gently would say that's a bit irrelevant because the existing system doesn't have $4 million a year. It had $2.5 million. And that's part of the way that this bill works, by the way, of ensuring that the increased funding in this bill, every bit of it, goes to the students, not to the system. So bear with me for a moment. You'll find in here that in FY23, $2.5 million was distributed. 60% had to go to the students. 40% of $2.5 million is $1 million. I'm not good at math, but I'm that good. And with $4 million, 25% stays with the system. 75% goes to the kid. 25% of $4 million is, again, $1 million. So the reference is in the fiscal note where it says that this bill will decrease funding for the schools is not quite accurate. Schools will be held harmless. We'll have the same amount of funding that they had before. And the intent of this bill is to grow the student side, to cover those things that would be out-of-pocket costs for the student in the absence of a funding stream. That's significantly important because you passed legislation last session in House Bill 246 that specifically provides that these experiences out in the workplace actually count for credit. So you want to stick as close as you can to the free system of public schools provided for in Article 10 of the Montana Constitution. I've got key points at the end here. A couple things I just let you know is that the discretion of the trustees remains intact. So fiscal notes on page 3 that identify that there will be less money for activities associated with discretion of the trustees. We use the term discretion of the trustees throughout this whole bill. Discretion when you're determining how to allocate the portion that's going to cover the student side, discretion on the system side as well. But the discretion remains fully intact in this bill. And also with regard to grades or 6 through 12, there's a reference in here that the amended language removes the requirement that the Office of Public Instruction distribute this funding to kids in grades 6 through 12. But if you look at the definition of qualified student in the bill, it is grade 6 through 12, and there's also a provision in the bill that requires an application from the board that demonstrates that they're going to ensure equality of educational opportunity to participate by all qualifying pupils of the district. So it's fully intact in terms of ensuring equality of educational opportunity and distribution of funding commensurate with the formula in the bill. I've got those keynotes sort of reiterated at the end of the note there, and like I say, I added page E2 out of House Bill 2, at least the version I see officially online. So in essence, about $500,000 biennial for something that will do some real remarkable work for kids that are out there working and getting their experience in trades to become successful in life. I'm available for any questions you may have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Melton. Ms. Curtis.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Amanda Curtis, CURTIS, the elected president of MFPE, here representing Montana's classroom teachers in this case, who in many, many, many instances, as I'm sure you already know, pay for many of the costs covered in this bill out of their pocket because they deeply care about the kids, and the kids don't, and their families do not have the means to provide these licenses or materials. So the money will be well spent. We thank the sponsor. We thank you for all the work you're doing for Montana kids and ask you to support this bill. It's the best bang for your buck you're going to get. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis, for the proponents.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. I have a meeting with teachers across the state, actually, the first Thursday of every month. Can I please be excused?
You may.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Further proponents.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sheridan Johnson. That's S-H-E-R-I-D-A-N here on behalf of the Montana Chamber of Commerce. Thank you to Representative Sprunger for carrying this bill. Two of the four pillars of the Montana Chamber's strategic plan are workforce development and entrepreneurship, and as such, we are strong supporters of career and technical education and the unique opportunities they provide. In particular, the Montana Chamber Foundation works with educators across the state to implement the Empowered Youth Entrepreneurship and Prospects programming to train students in business skills and prepare them to start their own business if they choose to do so. Funding like what is provided with the Advanced Opportunities Programming allows them to take these business skills they learn out of the classroom to get the work-based learning placement, purchase necessary supplies for their job, or expand their entrepreneurial pursuits. This funding is important for the vitality of our workforce and our communities, and we urge a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you. For the proponents, seeing none. Opponents, seeing none. Informational witnesses.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Crystal Smith, last name spelled S-M-I-T-H. I am the program manager for the Montana Advanced Opportunity Grant through the Office of Public Instruction. I'm here today as an informational witness and happy to answer any questions that you may have about the Montana Advanced Opportunities Grant.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Further informational witnesses. Welcome, Ms. Hall.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and committee. I am Nancy Hall, H-A-L-L. From the Office of Budget and Program Planning, and I prepared the fiscal note and I'm here to answer questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hall. Seeing no further informational witnesses, questions from the committee. Seeing none. Representative, you can close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I think that as we talk about career technical education, I can say that education is a complex discussion in our state right now. But what I heard when I was out on the doors, every single one of my constituents was supportive of career technical education and everything that we could do to practically make that possible and attainable for our students. I think this is a viable vessel to help us get that done, and I would encourage your support and ask for a due concur. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Just for kicks, how much dollars does this cost a year? Just before you close, how many dollars a year is in this bill?
Mr. Chair, there are $4 million per Great. Year appropriated.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We close the hearing on House Bill 257. Ten after five, committee, do you want to do some executive on some of these bills we heard today? Senator McGillivray.
Where do you want to start? Mr. Chair, do you want to start at the top or what?
Let's start with the one we just heard.
Yeah. Except you voted against this one.
257.
And the sponsor even said without. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 257. Do concur.
The motion is to concur with House Bill 257.
Which I've just lost.
Anybody have any discussion? I know it had a mixed vote on the floor, but plenty of, it was like a 34-16 or something, but we'll try a roll call vote.
Nope, good enough.
$8 million a year, Mr. Chairman?
Pardon me?
No, $8 million for the biennium.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, can I comment?
Just Senator Solomon.
Yeah, it's actually $4 million a year. It's up from $3.5 million, I think. The trick is it's already in the governor's budget. It's already in House Bill 2. So it's not an extra $4 million a year.
Okay. I think it's up from $2.5 million, I think, as I remember. But could be wrong. Go ahead, Cy. Oh, Senator Fuller, go ahead.
I was just going to ask a question. And why are we even... Why even pass the bill? Why not table it? If it's already in House Bill 2, it's already in House Bill 2, unless there's somebody who's going to amend it out.
The money in House Bill 2 is contingent on this bill passing.
Yeah. Oh, it's contingent on this bill passing. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Isn't there some coordinated
I misunderstood.
Yeah.
For a discussion.
Question.
Question's been called. Sorry, call the roll, please.
Vice Chair Glenn.
Let me see what he voted on the floor. Just a minute. No by proxy.
He was a no.
All right. Vice Chair Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Solomon.
Yes.
Senator McGilvery.
Yes.
Senator Boldman.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Bartel.
No.
Senator Mandeville.
No.
Senator Morgeau.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Lenz.
Nay.
Senator Lang.
No.
Senator Lynch.
No.
Senator Bogner.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
No.
Senator Flowers.
Yes.
Senator Fuller.
No.
Senator Vance.
No.
Senator Pope.
Yes.
Senator Wellborn.
Yes, by proxy.
Chairman Esp.
Well, we can reel it back in if we have to. No, that's how I voted on the floor.
I believe that makes it 9 votes yes, 10 votes no.
Wellborn did.
I think all of the no votes on the floor were financing claims.
Well, Senator Glimm's back now.
That's okay. I can blast it.
Let's. We just heard a school bill. And we voted, you know, that if you want to vote yes, it might change the outcome, which is fine. I mean,
it was just a cemetery bill out of the flathead.
9-10 vote, and it's the governor's bill.
Yeah, it's got to tell me how to vote on the other shit, because I wasn't here.
Oh. Okay. All right. So, Senator Glenn, would you reverse the vote to table, make that motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to reverse the vote and table.
Without objection, so ordered. Should we try House Bill 36?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 36. This was
Representative Beattie's bill on
Act revising laws related to advanced opportunity programs, Mr. Chairman.
And it changes the way we react to downturns in A and B.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it does, and it has to do with the next how many kids show up at school every year? If you get an unexpected bump in enrollment, and it causes some issues with your ability to fund for that because you're paid for the year before. This gives you an option, and it's automatic now instead of having to apply for it every time.
I mean, it's kind of a wash over time, the way I looked at the chart.
It has a little bit to do with some property tax relief that has in there, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to support the bill, but question's been called. Should we try a roll call vote or a voice vote?
Voice vote.
Voice vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Let's do roll call vote. Well, let's. Those the only two.
Lenz and Mandeville and
Four Musketeers. All right.
So Lenz, Mandeville, McGilvery, and Lang.
Senator Wellborn votes aye by proxy.
So the motion carries out.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Bowman and Morgeau vote aye by proxy.
I was a yes on that, Mr. Chairman.
So the motion carries.
So I have Glimm no, Lenz no, Mandeville no, and McGilvery no.
And Esp.
And Esp. Okay.
All right. Motion carries. 14-5. House Bill 36 has been concurred in finance and claims. It will go to the third reading. House Bill 381, he wants an amendment for that, so I'll get that prepared. It's been requested, so we may have it for House Bill 270. Care to move that, Senator Glimm?
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 270. This was by Representative Kastmeyer for an act extending the termination date for revisions to natural resource operations state special revenue account and general fund transfer.
Thank you, Vice Chair Glimm. That this bill extends the sunset, and so the $1 million a year shows up in the out years. They hope by next time to have more income from the fees to offset this number. Question's been called. Let's try a voice vote. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Senator Wellborn votes aye by proxy.
Senators Morgeau and Boldman vote aye by proxy.
House Bill 270 goes to, has passed. Finance and claim goes to third reading. Then, Senator Glimm, I don't know, you probably heard this bill somewhere before, House Bill 147,
yeah.
Representative Gillette.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 147 by Representative Gillette, Act creating an enhanced Medicaid reimbursement rate for providers of certain children's mental health services, Mr. Chairman.
So as I understood the hearing, it's probably only going to have an effect in the first year of the biennium. By then, the provider rates will catch up to what's proposed in this bill. But you guys in B heard it. I didn't. So, Senator Lenz, what do you think?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think you are right that there is an initial impact. There is some question as to how much it'll be taken advantage of. But it may create the structure going forward for psychiatric residential treatment facilities, not group homes.
It'll bring some kids home from out of state the idea.
I believe so. At least I hope so, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion, Senator Pope?
Well, just the obvious that when you send these kids who are already challenged out of state, away from family, out of their communities and all that, it's just a really horrible experience for them mostly, and it's very expensive for us. So it seems like a smart thing to do to me.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion? Seeing none, let's try a voice vote. All in favor of House Bill 147, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
Senator Wellborn votes aye by proxy.
Senators Boldman and Morgeau vote aye by proxy.
Motion carries unanimously. House Bill 147 is concurred in finance and claims. It will go to third reading. And then we had House Bill 243.
Mr. Chairman, I move to concur on House Bill 243. This was introduced by Representative Marler, an act requiring hunter and bow hunter safety and education participants to complete field days and requiring in-person courses, Mr. Chairman.
It's a no-brainer.
Well, I have a thought on that. I just called home two nights ago to see if we had a program going in Big Timber. We have a whole bunch of kids involved in a program with volunteers. You know, I don't know, spending. Senator Flowers asked the appropriate question. I think we need a bunch of fish, wildlife, and parks people to. Senator Bartel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Same thought process. I'd like to ask Senator Flowers a question. So, what did we do before COVID? We didn't have this many, if 8 FTEs, and now I get it that we're going to have a startup. And so I would be in favor of either putting a sunset date on this, if they truly do need 8 FTEs for a startup, is my thought. I mean, it's your, that's what you, this is your old stomping grounds, right? And so somehow I think we need to control it, because I can't see 8 permanent FTEs. I already forgot. I did the math already, and it's pretty expensive for Hunter's Ed. As a matter of fact, it's really expensive for Hunter's Ed every year. Taking it out of Pittman Roberts or whatever. So what? It's still money that I don't know that we're spending it. So I wondered if we could put a sunset date on it. I truly believe we need it. The program. I'm just not sure that the fiscal notice is what I would like to see happen. So what do you think, Senator Flowers?
Mr. Chair and Senator Bartel, I was thinking in the same direction, because I know the department did used to manage this program with every region has a information education coordinator. This was part of their job, 25%. It was demanding, I'll tell you that. It was a lot of work for that person, and I watched that, but they managed it. And I was kind of thinking in the same direction, that maybe we should allow this but sunset it, and they have 2 years to stand it up. I mean, the challenge is you only have somebody for 2 years, but they may be able to find a retired instructor who's willing to take it up for 2 years, get it stood up, and then they can let it go. So that's kind of where I would agree with that.
So I'm not from a larger city, but you ain't going to need this in most small rural Montana towns, and you're certainly not going to need 8 FTE. I mean, if you want to rethink the number of FTE and mend it, I'm just not going here. I mean, maybe Bozeman and Billings fell apart, but I'd be surprised if they're not still holding volunteer classes in those towns too. Senator Mandeville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm also not sure if this doesn't need some coordination language. I see firearms and bow hunter, but I don't see crossbows in this bill.
They're close.
Mr. Chairman.
Lang.
Senator Lang.
Mr. Chairman, I have a policy issue that I knew, and I did vote for it, but it would probably come here, but I question if January 1985 being the cutoff date. That's a 35-year-old child or person right now. And I think if you're 35, you've already been out there. And I just think that's a little late in the age to start having to attend this stuff.
Yeah, I do too. Yes, sir.
Senator Mr. Chair,
Flowers.
Yeah, I think fundamentally this is a really good idea. And I think there's probably some agreement around the table that going back to in-person approach is a good idea. Could I work on an amendment on this to deal with the cost and maybe just do a kind of suck it up sort of approach to it, and rather than killing the bill right now, would you be willing to let me do that?
I would be amenable to that, as long as the amendment is pretty drastic.
Tomorrow morning.
So we have an amendment for 381.
I did. I withdraw my motion.
Thank you.
So I think If Senator Glimm would move to reconsider our action on this bill, I would save the trouble of having a table or last motion on the floor.
Which one did Swanson talk on?
Mr. Chairman, I move to remove House Bill 257 from the table.
You heard the motion. You understand the issue. Do we need a roll call vote?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Solomon.
Thank you for the motion, and it's saving us 2 days of time on the floor if we reconsider our motion. And
yeah, it'll go straight to third reading. I think it'll have support on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I have Senator Wellborn's proxy, and it was pointed out to me he voted no on the floor, and so I'd probably need to vote him no to be fair to him.
Yes. And so did you vote him yes on the bill?
Well, he didn't indicate how he wanted to vote on the bill, so I voted the way I voted. But Senator Bartell pointed out to me he voted no on the floor, so I was just going to be consistent with his floor vote.
All right. Well, let's just try a roll call vote on the on the reconsider motion. If it doesn't work, it'll be what it is.
So, and Mr. Chair, are we reconsidering or withdrawing from the table because it was tabled?
It's the present voting.
Withdrawing from the table, which is present in voting.
All right.
So it doesn't matter.
Yep. Vice Chair Glimm.
No.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Solomon.
Yes.
Senator McGilvery.
Yes.
Senator Bartell.
No.
Senator Mandeville.
No.
Senator Lenz.
Nay.
Senator Lang.
Yes.
Senator Lynch.
Yes.
Senator Bogner.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Flowers.
Yes.
Senator Fuller.
No.
Senator Vance.
No.
Senator Pope.
Yes.
Chairman Esp.
Yes.
10 votes yes, 6 votes no.
9-7.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, I move.
Do concur. 257? 257.
Mr. Chairman, I move do concur House Bill 257.
Thank you, Vice Chair Glimm. I guess I wanted to vote for it because of the nice job Mr. Melton did on the fiscal note. The only one that ever did a good job on a fiscal note, on a fiscal note bill, but any more discussion? I think we all know where it's going. Aye, roll call vote.
All right. Vice Chair Glimm.
No.
Vice Chair Ellis.
Yes.
Senator Solomon.
Yes.
Senator McGilvery.
Yes.
Senator Boldman.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Bartell.
No.
Senator Mandeville.
No.
Senator Morgeau.
Yes, by proxy.
Senator Lenz.
Nay.
Senator Lang.
Yes.
Senator Lynch.
Yes.
Senator Bogner.
Yes.
Senator Cuff.
Yes.
Senator Flowers.
Yes.
Senator Fuller.
No.
Senator Vance.
No.
Senator Pope.
Yes.
Senator Wellborn.
Yes, by proxy.
Chairman Esp.
Or excuse me, no by proxy. No. Sorry. No by proxy.
Confused. I'll vote no, too, I think. I think it's 10-7.
I have 11-8.
11-8. You're right. 11-8. Motion carries. The bill will go to third reading. I think that's all we're going to have tonight. We have an amendment being prepared for two bills. And we're going to take up executive action on sections A, C, and E tomorrow morning. We'll start at, 9 o'clock give us enough time?
Dave, do you want to change that?
8:30? All right, 8:30 in the morning. Yes. Don't leave anything you... Well, they'll lock the room at night, so... Yeah. So anything else to come before us? Meeting adjourned.